Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Uh-oh. WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
Don't tell me. We're about to go over a huge waterfowl.
Yep.
Sharp rocks at the bottom?
Most likely.
Sports Talk Saturday.
Bring it on.
On WGR.
Booyah!
Sports Radio 550.
All right, we're rolling into the final hour here of Sports Talk Saturday, but don't worry. There's more Sports Talk coming up after this. Brian Koziel, Dan Cave, live at Batavia Downs. Going to be broadcasting from Preakness Stakes coverage. Of course, those guys will be talking more about, you know, the horse racing aspect of everything, the race coming up today, but they'll also talk some Sabres hockey and the hire of Ralph Kruger. We'll get Brian Koziel's thoughts on what's happening with that. We'll also get Brian's thoughts on the PGA Championship and what's been going on there as of late. Obviously, heading into today, Brooks Koepka was leading the way with a 7-shot lead on the field. However, another aspect of that tournament that's so important is Tiger Woods missing the cut. Misses his first cut after a major win, or something along those lines. He's missed the cut in his How do I want to explain this? So the tournament after he wins a major, he misses the cut. It's the first time that it's ever happened in his career where he wins a major and then misses the cut the next major. So currently right now, Brooks Koepka leading the way, 12 under par. Adam Scott and Jordan Spieth both at 5 under par, 7 shots back. The number of players that are behind them include, let's see here, there are 6 golfers behind. A couple of names, notable names include Dustin Johnson and Daniel Berger. Justin Rose is at 3 under, Ricky Fowler's at 2 under. By the way, Brooks Koepka teeing off at 2:50 this afternoon, part of the final group along with Jordan Spieth. So lots of action going on at Bethpage. We'll get the latest from Brian Koziel coming up in a matter of moments. But 803-0551, 888-550-2550. What is the next step for Jason Botterill and the Buffalo Sabres this offseason? It's been primarily dominated with talk of re-signing Jeff Skinner, but there are other options that you can chime in with your thoughts on. How important it is to re-sign Jeff Skinner, you're more than welcome to call in 803-0551, 888-550-2550. Jamie tweets in on the topic. The heck with Jeff Skinner. He's not going to sign because Jason Botchel ain't going to sign him for crazy money. He wants $10 million without Jack Eichel. He's nobody. I don't think that Jeff Skinner's a nobody without Jack Eichel. I mean, if he goes to Toronto and he plays with a guy like John Tavares or Austin Matthews, he's certainly a somebody, all right? He probably scores 40 goals again. So that's not necessarily true without Jack. Does he want $10 million? I'm sure he would love to get $10 million, but I definitely don't think that he's going to get $10 million on anyone's market. Maybe close to 9, but I don't even think he makes 9. I know he's a 40-goal scorer, but again, he's a winger. He's not a centerman. He's a left winger. And yeah, he can score goals, but yeah, wingers are certainly not as important as centers, but I mean, if you get the right winger and you get the one that can put up that production, that would be certainly a big payout for him. But again, I just don't think he's going to get nine. I don't even think he's going to get $9 million. $10 million is certainly, I think, out of the question. Unless one team is desperate to try and get some sort of goal scoring and they pay crazy money for him. Dan tweets in that he does not think that Ristolainen gets moved. Certainly interesting because listening to Jason Botterill, and again, you'll hear from him coming up here in about 10 minutes. We'll play back some of his interview before we get to Brian Koziel. Certainly Jason Botterill, in his talks about Ristolainen, talks him up a lot and how he's still developing as a young player. And Ralph Kruger's job next is going to be figuring out how to help him take that next step. But it almost seemed to me that maybe Jason Botterill was just talking him up just to kind of, I don't know, you never know who's listening to a sports radio talk station in Buffalo. Maybe a general manager of another team is listening, and Jason Botterill's just trying to talk him up. I don't know. We'll see. But I certainly did not get any feeling of Jason Botterill saying what he said to assure everyone that Rasmus Ristolainen is going nowhere. I think that there is that chance that he stays as a Buffalo Sabre. I'd probably put it at 55-45 that Rasmus Ristolainen actually does stay with the Buffalo Sabres. But again, it's close to 50-50. And as time goes on, I'm sure those odds are going to change. But at this point right now, I would say that the chances of Ristolainen are slightly greater that he stays a Buffalo Sabre, especially with how a new coach is going to be coming into the picture and how, you know, things might change a little bit. We'll see how it all plays out, but I'm pretty confident that it's going to be a situation where Ristolainen stays, and then I'm still confident that Jeff Skinner re-signs. It might be a situation like Steven Stamkos years ago, where Stamkos looks like he's going to hit free agency. He's talking like maybe he's going to hit free agency, and then, you know, just minutes after a couple of huge trades in the NHL, Stamkos decides, nope, I'm going to stay in Tampa Bay, re-sign on a very nice team-friendly deal. Could happen that way. I could see that happening as well. 803-0551, 888-552-550. Dave tweets in, not re-signing Jeff Skinner is a major step back, but financially it has to fit both parties. That's hard. That's the hard part of the deal. Again, I do firmly believe that it is more of a term thing than it is money-wise. I think that it is it's certainly more of the Sabres being cautiously, you know, approaching this as we don't want to sign for five. We don't want to sign for 8 years because what happens if his game turns for the worst at age 31, 32? Because again, if he signs an 8-year contract, the contract will take him till he's about 34 or 35. What happens though if it happens to come about that, oh hey, his production steps off, kind of like what happened with Kyle Oposo, and hopefully Oposo can turn it around. Who knows? Maybe he's not even part of the picture in the long term, but we'll see. We'll see. But I would also bet that Kyle Oposo's here next year and being part of this roster. To buy him out it wouldn't be a terrible option to buy him out, but the cap hit over the next couple of years for the buyout would be pretty impactful. And again, I'm trying to remember who brought it up, whether it was Matt Beauvais or Mike Ajello, but the cap is going to go up. It's going to keep going up. And yeah, it may be a nice benefactor for Jeff Skinner too, is that, hey, who cares? The cap is going up anyway. You're still going to be able to afford me. You're still going to be able to afford Rasmus Dahlin and a bunch of other people too as well. So what difference should it make if I'm getting 5 years or 8 years or 7 years or whatnot? Those negotiations will continue on, and hopefully they can get a deal done. Michael tweets in, get Kruger in ASAP, meet with each player individually, including the ones in Rochester. Then he and Jason Botterill can group together and figure out what the priorities are. Kruger absolutely must be involved in player matters, including the draft, trades, re-signing players, etc. I think that's a huge part of it. And it certainly seemed like when Phil Housley was here that, and Paul Hamilton has mentioned this too, that maybe that Paul, or maybe that Housley and Botterill weren't exactly on the same page at some points, but they weren't communicating entirely, even though they said they were. Maybe they weren't communicating entirely on trade decisions or decisions to move a player here or there, but I certainly think that a guy like Kruger, especially with him kind of being now in a background as a chairman with Southampton, I know, I understand. People say that, well, you can't rely on the soccer guy, guys. You can't rely on him to make good decisions. Why is he the head coach? Let's get one thing straight here. Ralph Kruger is not a head coach with soccer. He did not coach Southampton. He was a chairman. He served in an executive role. Maybe that experience, though, will help in some aspect with the Buffalo Sabres. That's all I'm going to say, though, is that maybe at this point, Kruger is a little more relied upon because Botterill can maybe bounce some things off and Kruger can bounce some things back at Botterill, whereas Housley was just the head coach and he was just only the head coach and pretty much, you know, maybe didn't have the best of insight when it came to running a team or trying to acquire a player or sign a player or whatnot. Maybe Ralph Kruger is going to add to that. Certainly interesting, though. Certainly an interesting add with Kruger and where the Sabres go from here because, I mean, now the real work begins. Now the real work begins, and it's just a waiting process now. And hopefully a deal gets done with Skinner, because I really do want to see Skinner back. I think that the way he fit, I think he fits really well with Jack Eichel. And Sam Reinhart obviously fits well in that group, but Reinhart might have to move down a line and then somebody else can take that role. We'll see. There's a lot of unanswered questions that hopefully we'll get some answers to before the NHL draft at the very least. And then once free agency hits, then things kind of speed up and kind of all happen at once, especially on free agency day. The next couple of days after that, we'll probably be busy. And then between like July 5th and early September, when training camp is about to begin, things will really start to die down, and then we can speculate all we want. But at this point of the season, of course, we're just waiting for the Stanley Cup final to get here and come and go, and then let the havoc begin. I don't think this year is going to be anything like it has been the past 2 years with all the hype of, well, there could be a lot of trades happening this year with Seattle, or this year where it's just like, well, there could be this happening. I think if there's anything to be hyped up about this offseason is offer sheets. The offer sheet might return, might make its comeback. That would be a lot of fun, though. That would be incredibly fun. I think that would be very, very intriguing to talk about offer sheets once again. Last one came when Ryan O'Reilly was offer sheeted by the Calgary Flames, which the Colorado Avalanche matched. And since then, it has been what seems like a complete enigma with the offer sheet. It's been talked about, but it's not there. It might be making its return. Kind of like the Night King. Nobody thought that the Army of the Dead or the Night King ever existed, and everybody talked it down. And then all of a sudden, here's the Night King and here's the Army of the Dead. Crap. I know, I just went full Game of Thrones nerd on Derek, and he's giving me this very blank stare.
As someone who accidentally spoiled something for a certain Sal Capaccio.
Yeah. The
despite
only thing,
never watching it.
Listen, the only thing you don't have to spoil with me is the ending. But again, I know that there's leaks out there. I'm really trying my best to not
read or watch any
of the leaks that happens with tomorrow's series finale.
If I found out what happened with tomorrow's show, I would be charging large amounts of money to make sure that I don't ruin it for everybody.
Well, good. Then I don't have to worry about you then.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I would be charging HBO, be like, I know what happens. Don't let me ruin this for you. Give me money.
Mark tweets in, and this is an interesting thing for what he had to say for his offseason plans. Obviously, the Sabres, they hired Kruger, and he coaches for the next 2 years. Now, Pierre LeBrun reports that the deal is a 3-year deal. And I could easily see Ralph Kruger living out the 3-year deal and as the head coach here. And then after that, you go from there, whether it's 1-2-year deals or maybe he steps down and they find another coach. But this is kind of where it all fits in. Mark says, Sabres hire Kruger as head coach for the next 2 years. They hire Sheldon Keefe as an assistant once Marley's season is done. After 2 years, Kruger assigns the president of hockey operations, and then Keefe is promoted to head coach. And I think Mike Jello would agree with me here, and I think that a lot of other people would agree here too. I don't think there's any way that Sheldon Keefe is leaving that Leafs organization unless he is going to be a head coach somewhere and it is the exact situation that he wants to be in. I don't think the Sabres are that situation right now. And again, I have this really weird thought that maybe, just maybe, there's a chance that if Sheldon Keefe wins the AHL championship with Toronto again this year, that maybe they promote Sheldon Keefe to head coach in, with the Maple Leafs, and then Mike Babcock's either fired or he's just put in another role in the organization until he's able to go out and find another hockey job somewhere else as a head coach. But that's just my wackadoo thought process. 803-0551, 888-552-550. We'll take an early timeout here because I want to get in Jason Botterill and what he had to say with Howard and Jeremy yesterday. And then, of course, we'll have Brian Koziel on to wrap up the show, get thoughts on the PGA Championship, the Sabres, and also a little look ahead to the Preakness Stakes. That's all coming up here as we wrap up Sports Talk Saturday. Brayton Wilson here, Derek Kramer producing on WGR. All right, let's waste no time here. Let's get to Jason Bottrell. He was on with Howard and Jeremy yesterday, and we'll play about 12 minutes here of what he had to say. So without further ado, here is some of what Jason Bottrell had to say with Howard and Jeremy after the hiring of Ralph Kuger on Wednesday.
When you think about the job that's ahead of Ralph Kuger and you, I think there's something interesting about the way that the season played out. Back in the win streak, I think a lot of people knew you guys weren't as good as that win streak. And down the stretch, while it was going poorly, I think there were a lot of numbers that indicated you weren't as bad as that. The save percentage, the PDO, it was so bad that it almost seemed like, I don't know, you couldn't catch a break. I mean, I know things went poorly down the stretch, but do you have a similar evaluation of how it finished? The results were not good, but it was almost the reverse of the win streak. It ended up looking a lot worse than it was.
I think you're right. Just we were on a roller coaster throughout the year, and that's as an organization we have to have a lot more consistency to our game. And you know, I think when things are going really well, we have to continue to improve on different things. I think we got caught up a little bit in the motion, the excitement of what was going around it, and realizing and not working on some of the holes that we did have in our game. Later on in the year, we needed more players, staff members, everybody in the organization needed to find a better way to stand up. And hey, when this, you know, some of the losing streaks were at two or three games, we have to end it there. And we didn't do a good enough job from that standpoint. And you know, as I've said before numerous times, winning in the second half of the National Hockey League, it's a change. And I think we saw that right off the bat. We came out of the All-Star break, played a game in Columbus, which was fine, but then we played Dallas in our second game, and you can just see the physical nature of it. They really went after some of our good young players, and Erasmus Dahlin and a Casey Mittelstadt from the physical standpoint. And I think it really taught our guys a lesson that, hey, this is how you have to win, and these are going to be the type of games you're going to play in the second half. And I think as disappointed as our players were at the end of the season, they've learned a lot from what they went through throughout the entire year. And now it's important that we don't make those same mistakes next year.
The answer to this might be both. Is it on those players individually to bulk up, be more, you know, become more mature as they might just naturally? Or is it about putting together a roster that maybe can withstand that kind of thing a little bit better?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, but it's also, too, like, it's not about size at all. It's about compete. It's about battle. Like, you look at the playoffs, there are certainly, you know, the National Hockey League, there are certainly strong physical players, but it's about getting to the front of the net. It's about winning the battles in front of the net in your own D zone. To me, we have players that have enough size. It's now just of understanding, hey, how do you go into a corner and win the battles? And I go back to my own sort of experiences being a part of teams in Pittsburgh that played in 2008 and 2009 against Detroit Red Wings. You know, Datsyuk and Zetterberg would always come out of the puck, out of the corners with pucks. You have to find a way, whether it's physical strength or using your skill to win those one-on-one battles. And I think that's just something that we have to continue to improve on as a team.
On that note, what have you identified in terms of areas where you need to improve? You talked about compete and battle. As you do an overall breakdown of what this roster was, whether it's offense, whether it's defense, whether it's speed, whether it's toughness, or any of the stuff you can go through, Jason, on the list, yep. What have you identified as areas where I need to make this roster better in these particular areas?
Well, I think, you know, you just look at our depth scoring that's been talked a lot about up front. We just relied too much on Jeff, Jack, and Sam for scoring this year. We have to, you know, look to bring in more talent from that end, and then we also have to continue to develop our own talent, whether it's Casey Mittelstadt, whether it's bringing up a Olofsson or a Nylander. It's you know, Tage Thompson taking a step in his development. It's a Connor Sheary who we think there's more offense that he can provide there. But I think that the areas that I mentioned before, just in the front of the net, we gave up way too many chances in our own defensive end. We have to learn to protect that area better. We have to learn to win our one-on-one battles in there a little bit more. And the same thing in the offensive zone. I thought, we didn't have enough shots right from that red zone area right in front of the net. And you look at the playoffs, how tight it is. There's always traffic out there. The goalies are that good. You're going to have to get players to go there more and have more success there.
So do you think, can you convince guys who didn't do it enough to do it, or do you have to go out and get guys that do that?
I think with young players, you can always convince them. I think you see players evolve and learn from their experiences and understand a little bit what it takes to have success in the league. So, yeah, you can certainly teach that trait.
You mentioned Jason Baltry with us on our Western Hotline. You mentioned Casey Mittelstadt a moment ago. I'd love to get your thoughts. Like, here, that's a guy I think everybody we look at and go, you know, down the road at some point, hopefully, top two center with Eichel, boom, you're set on your top two lines. What did you see from him last season? Do you think he is, I don't even know how to phrase this, Jason, can you project him as a number two guy, or it's still too early and you've got to go find somebody else to handle that role?
Well, I think, you know, we continue to have high expectations for Casey, and the great thing is I know Casey does too, and I think sometimes you come in at the end of the year and you have a little bit of success offensively like you did the year before, you sort of assume that that's going to happen and carry over, and then you realize how difficult it is to sustain success over 82 games in the National Hockey League. And what I did like a lot about Casey was, you know, his battle. He didn't shy away from those difficult areas there. But I did think he wore down as the season progressed, especially in back-to-back situations. You look in February, March, April, I think he struggled there. Some of his best talk, I thought, came after breaks or where there was a little bit of a day off or something like that there. So I think he still can take his conditioning to another level, and I think he's focused on that this summer. And, you know, I think his offensive creativity that he can bring will allow him to eventually go into that top six role.
Sabres GM Jason Baltry with us here on the Wester Hotline. The latest on Jeff Skinner, without negotiating in the media, how are you feeling? How should Sabres fans feel about it? And just as a natural kind of offshoot of that, do you and other people in the front office, as you try to chart the offseason to make plans, is there a contingency plan if he does not want to sign? You know, do you have a plan A? Do you have a plan B? Knowing that there are multiple ways this thing could go?
You always have to have different plans. You know, the way this game operates, you have to have plans for, hey, we didn't expect some of our defensemen to, such as a Lawrence Pilot or Bogosian, go down with injuries. You have to have different plans in place to in case those situations arise. And look, a contract is never done until you get it signed. So, but our discussions with Jeff have been extremely positive. And I think it's been a relationship that's worked out very well for the Buffalo Sabres. And I think it's a relationship that's worked out very well for Jeff. You know, just as we went through the coaching search here, sometimes people get a little impatient. Well, we wanted to make sure we went through the process correctly. I think what's going on with Jeff and ourselves right now is, look, there was never going to be an extension announced before the coach was hired. The coach is now hired. We'll continue our discussions there and get the chance to sit down with Jeff and go over things on how we see him fitting in and how Ralph is going to coach this team and sort of how he's going to, you know, interact with his players and his structure moving forward there. And then, hey, we'll hopefully find a way to get a deal done and stuff. But from our standpoint, our discussions with both Jeff and Newport Sports have been extremely positive.
I know you said, you know, you don't want to negotiate in the media, but let me ask you this. After he talks to Ralph Kruger and hopefully things go well in that, do you think you could still sign him before free agency? Or can you tell us at all if they've given you an indication, hey, listen, he still wants to play there, he's still interested in re-signing, but as long as we're this close, we would at least like to see what's going on in the market?
So you would like me not to negotiate through the media?
Well, that's not, I didn't ask you for term or dollars. You know, I didn't say 6 years and $8 million per. I just want to know if they want to at least check the market out.
Look, and I can't mind read them. All I can say is that we'll sit down with them. And I think, you know, sitting down and Ralph get to know Jeff and Jeff getting to know Ralph is going to be an important part of the equation here moving forward.
Jason, what about Johan Larsson? There was a report, conflicting report, that he may be leaving. Do you have any update on what's going on with Johan Larsson?
Come on, guys. That everything on the world of Twitter is not always correct.
I believe everything I see on social media, Jason. Nobody lies.
No, from everything, our discussions with both Johan and, again, his agency with Newport Sports, there's nothing to that report last week.
One name who always sparks an interesting debate in Sabres nation, if you will, is Rasmus Ristolainen. And I'm not going to ask you, are you going to trade him, because you wouldn't answer my question anyway. But give me your evaluation. You've had 2 years to watch him play. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, he's a guy that, is he? You think, you know what, guys? He's a top two guy. Yeah, he's a 3-4 guy. He's not a 25-minute guy. He's a 20-minute. What is your honest evaluation of Rasmus Ristolainen and then what you believe his value is to your team at this time?
Yep. Well, I think in today's game, we put too much value on it. You talked a little bit about, you know, where do you see Casey moving forward, top mm-hmm. six, top nine, what it is. Like, what we're trying to create here is a situation where, you know, we have four lines that can score. And I think the same thing is from a defensive standpoint. You know, you're looking for guys in sort of the top four, whether they're top pairing or second pairing guys. To me, you're looking for top four guys that can handle different roles for you and play the bulk of your minutes on the back end. And we certainly view Risto in that category there. And, you know, there's Risto's like anyone else. He has his faults. He has to continue to improve his game, just like so many of our other players. But what we've loved seeing him in action is, you know, when he's in that matchup situation. You know, I think about it, end of February, I believe it was, we played back-to-back games against Tampa Bay and Washington. And, you know, he had the specific role of, you know, playing against Kucherov, playing against Ovechkin. And I think when he has that specific matchup, he does an amazing job with that. And you've seen in the playoffs how the physical game sort of is escalated there. You think of, you know, what Risto can do in over a seven-game series there. I think it can be very effective there. It's now our job to surround him with enough talent and enough skill to make sure we get into the playoffs.
A follow on him, and you mentioned a moment ago, like every player, he has his flaws. He's got 424 games in the NHL. Two-parter.
Yep.
Do you believe a guy, when you reach 400-plus games, do you believe a player is who he is? And if he can get better, what do you think Ralph Krueger can do to help Ristolainen?
Yep. I think players continually develop. Games played, especially, is not the big factor. To me, it's age. And especially with Risto in his mid-20s right now, like, there's plenty of development still going on there. You look at, you know, and these are elite defensemen out there, but you look at Nicholas Lindstrom, you look at Chris Letang, you know, all these defensemen, it's more in their late 20s, early 30s, where they really, I think, come into their prime from that standpoint. There's always an injury factor they have to play into, but you know, I think with most young players, there's always opportunity for growth and certainly for defensemen there. You know, with Ralph coming into the equation, the biggest thing I think that he needs to continue to work with Risto on is picking his spots and when to, you know, when to jump up in the rush, when to move the puck a little bit quicker and stuff in different scenarios there. Because I think, like, at times he plays so many minutes. One of his assets of being able to support the rush and get up there, he just doesn't have the energy to do it there from that standpoint. So, and continue to, I think, just as a whole, with Ralph coming in, bringing in a little bit, you know, different structure and hopefully a little bit more of structure, making it a little bit more easier on our reads for some of our defense, will hopefully help our entire group back there.
All right, that was Jason Bottrell with Howard and Jeremy. If you want to listen to that complete interview, you can do so on demand at WGR550.com. When we come back, we will check in with Brian Koziel live at Batavia Downs. We'll get his thoughts on what's going on with the Sabres, the Preakness Stakes, also the PGA Championship. We'll get you all that before he takes over at 2 o'clock along with Dan Cave for 3 hours to talk about the Preakness and also anything that's going on in our extended edition of Sports Talk Sunday. So more coming up in a matter of moments here on WGR. I feel like this is the appropriate tune to bring in Brian Koziel, who's live at Batavia Downs right now. Getting ready for the 2019 Preakness Stakes. No Triple Crown winner at stake this year, but still, we're going to have some fun talking some horse racing and about any other things that's going on right now. Brian, good afternoon. How are you doing today, sir?
Good. And I'm going to throw you for a loop. We actually are not at Batavia Downs.
Oh, you're not at Batavia. My apologies.
No, that's all right. We are at the OTB on Military Road in Niagara Falls.
Gotcha. Okay.
Inside a lot of restaurants.
Very good.
We're here ready to go. And yeah, it was fun. We were at Batavia Downs last time.
Right,
of course,
last time.
Derby.
That's right.
And, of course, we're going to be joined by Ryan Hasenauer from Batavia Downs here to start the show. But
awesome.
We'll be sure to grill him about the replay that happened last time, Brayden. I know you and I have seen many replays in hockey that we watch all the time.
Yeah.
And, of course, all the other sports that we watch. And now horse racing's biggest stage had replay last time. So we'll obviously be talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, that was such an interesting development that kind of happened just because in the 145 years of the Kentucky Derby, it has never happened before where a winner had been overturned, especially due to video replay. But, I mean, looking back at it and hearing from people who know horse racing and understand how this stuff kind of works, and even my dad, who's had plenty of experience in horse racing, is been in just being involved in horses, said that, yeah, that probably was the right call. It looked like that maximum security had impeded with the progression of one or two of the horses there, which then led to him being able to kind of box them out and him get the victory. But certainly, you know, video replay just ruining everything at this point, Brian. Obviously, game three between the Sharks and Blues, they can't go to video replay to argue the hand pass, which was clearly a hand pass. The video replay couldn't dictate that the five-minute major that was given out to the Vegas Golden Knights against the Sharks, and then the Sharks end up scoring four goals. It seems certainly inevitable at this point, especially in hockey now, Brian, that video replay is going to take on another life here coming up maybe even next season.
Yeah, the Sharks, have had three major calls go their way in each of their series. I think with that Game 7 offsides call against Colorado.
Yeah, that one
so,
too.
From being a young Sabres fan at the time when they obviously lost the Stanley Cup final game six to the Dallas Stars with Brett Hull in the crease. It's such a tough way to lose the game. I mean, think about it. You're a Blues fan here. They've never won a Stanley Cup. You know, they barely ever get this far. They're a team that seems to make the playoffs quite often, but they never really get this far that often. And to lose a game like that, I mean, St. Louis, arguably you could say would have a very good chance to be up 3-1 in this series right now. Of course, they're still in it, but I mean, what a terrible way to lose a game when you just know a bad call was made. And I think about just how that NHL, you know, the Sabres, of course, Stanley Cup final, game six. And again, it's not a guarantee the Sabres would have went on to win the cup, nor was it been a fact that the Blues would have won the game. But you hate to lose it when you know there's a clear rules violation. And, you know, as far as the horse racing connection that we mentioned there, I mean, did they get it right? You know, we've talked with people that are in the horse racing industry, and they say yes. And, you know, Ryan will come on with us in a few minutes here, and he'll say yes, they got it right. But it's just the thing that we love about sports is, you know, what's the old ABC wide world of sports, right? The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
Right.
Well, it's like, you can't have either one because it's like you got to wait to make sure it's confirmed.
Yeah.
And is there a challenge? You know, there is no thrill of victory because you're always sitting there saying, oh, is that a red flag on the field? Was that really a touchdown?
That's what happened with the Women's World Championship between U.S. and Finland.
Right.
Finland thought they scored the game winner. They celebrated, you know, they got equipment all over the ice and they're happy and they're thrilled. And then after a 10-minute review, it gets overturned and they go on. And then the United States ends up winning in a shootout.
Yeah, what I think I enjoy so much about sports is the reaction, the emotion, even in the bad times. Obviously, if you're a Buffalo fan, we all know about that too. I mean, just how it shouldn't just all of a sudden 10 minutes later change. In every single sport, almost, replay is obsessively too long. They all need to fix that regardless of – we have great technology – and there's a clear argument that you could make, I think, to say getting it right is the right way to do it now in sports. And that's fine. There's obviously millions of dollars at stake sometimes in these higher events. And what you'd say, whether it's a playoff game in a sport where a team moves on or a team gets eliminated. I mean, there's so much at stake. There's careers at stake sometimes, whether a coach is going to go on and win and get the, you know, coaching extension or maybe get fired because his team loses. So there is a lot at stake in these events. I mean, for the Kentucky Derby, millions swung based upon who won that race. And, you know, even just going on with Triple Crown possibilities and studying fees and things like that. So, we'll talk about that with Ryan again here coming up. But, I mean, it's just that's millions and millions of dollars. And when there's that much at stake, you think, okay, then probably more people are going to say, let's get it right. All right, that's fine, but there has to be a better way to get it done in a shorter manner, because what happened at the Kentucky Derby, what happens way too much when we watch NHL games, what happens way too much when we watch NFL games is that it takes forever. To me, I feel like there's only one sport that has gotten replay right and actually has made it entertaining, and that's tennis.
Yeah.
For anybody that has watched a tennis match, when they have that shot spot, and there's a challenge, which doesn't happen that often.
No,
you know,
it doesn't.
Once or twice a set, maybe, there's a challenge. And they've turned it actually into making it fun.
Yeah, because they clap. They're all back.
Yeah,
they're clapping.
The crowd gets into it. Clap, clap, clap. And what does it take? Probably 10 seconds total. They show the ball hitting the ball. Yeah, they show the ball hitting the court. They zoom in, and they zoom in tremendously well, and then the crowd reacts. It's good. Other than that, there hasn't been any other sport that I think has been able to make replay work in a quick, efficient fashion and somehow made it entertaining, too.
Yeah. So
if there's a way to model what tennis is doing with their replay in these other sports, then please figure it out, because it's very annoying to watch replay in pretty much every other sport that we watch.
Brian Koziel joining me right now. He's at the OTB location on Military Road in Niagara Falls. So, Brian, obviously with the Stanley Cup final set, at least in the East with the Boston Bruins, who do you think comes out of the West, and can either of those teams, the Blues or the Sharks, beat Boston?
No, to your second answer. The Bruins are just, I think, just too complete. They've got guys that can score. They've got maybe the best penalty killer in the league in Patrice Bergeron. They've got a goalie that's playing great. They've got playoff experience. They have four lines that all seem to contribute. They can play an edgy game. They also can play a high-scoring game. They can play a low-scoring game because of Rask. I think they're just the most complete team. And I just didn't think Boston had a chance because I didn't think they would be able to survive what is the format, which is having to play Tampa in round two. But lucky for them, Columbus knocks out Tampa, and here we are with them being there. I thought they were a top 3-4 team all year. I mean, their points total would indicate that too. Out of the West, I like St. Louis. I just think that they also maybe play a little bit more complete game. I think that Ryan O'Reilly's story is intriguing, to be honest. I know some people might say it's annoying as a Sabre fan, but he's a fun story to watch. I think they've got the most talented player in Vladimir Tarasenko on both sides. And having a young goalie who's pretty much outperforming what you'd expect him to do in this sort of situation. I think that series, though, is a coin flip. But if you're asking them for my rooting interest, it's for St. Louis. I'd like to see Boston and St. Louis go at it.
Yeah, the last time that the Blues were in the Stanley Cup final, 1970 against the Bruins in the infamous Bobby Orr.
Flying through the ice after the goal. That's
yep,
right.
Exactly. Brian, shifting over here to the PGA Championship, it's been pretty much all Brooks Koepka in the opening two rounds. Koepka with a 7-shot lead as he's going to be teeing off in just under an hour here from Bethpage. Is there anyone that has a legitimate chance to catch him at the top of the leaderboard, or is it just pretty much right now, as long as Koepka does not collapse epically, he might be riding to a fairly easy victory?
Yeah, I don't see anybody catching him, and it's not a slight on the leaders, because look at the names that are catching him today. I mean, Spieth is in second, Adam Scott is in second, Dustin Johnson is in fourth, Justin Rose is in ninth. I mean, these are big names that are as talented as anybody in the game, but I just think the margin is too big. I mean, 7 shots just to the second place people right there. I mean, Brooks Koepka shot 63-65. I mean, even if he goes out and just is a couple under par, maybe 68-68 or even 68-70, I mean, that puts him at 14 under. I mean, these guys are going to have to go out and shoot like two rounds in a row of 6 under par. I just don't see it happening. This course is still rather difficult, despite the fact that one player seems to be making it look easy, and the conditions are perfect for him. You have to hit it long and straight. He's doing it better than anybody, and because of the soft conditions, because we've had all the rain in the Northeast, you can kind of go after pins, and these greens aren't lightning quick like maybe we see sometimes at the U.S. Open, so his putting, I think, right now is as good as anybody as well. So it's the complete package he's putting together if he does win this. Probably the closest thing in a short period of time that we've seen since Tiger did his thing back in the early 2000s, when he was just winning, you know, one or two majors every single
right.
season. I mean, he will have won now 4 majors in a 3-year span.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very impressive
stat.
It's
incredible. Yeah. Speaking of Tiger, obviously he misses the cut. It's the first time in his career that after he wins a major, the next major he plays in, he gets cut. He misses the cut, I should say. What happened with Tiger in his opening two rounds at Bethpage?
He was very poor off the tee, and unlike at the Masters really doesn't have thick rough. It's actually a very friendly course in that perspective when you're talking about, you know, being penalized off the tee. As long as you don't find yourself directly behind a tree, at the Masters, you can kind of get away with it. And if you remember from his final round, there were a few times where off the tee, you thought Tiger was in trouble, and then lo and behold, when he got up to his ball, there was an opening. But he never had to worry necessarily about a bad lie. Not the case at Bethpage Black. It's got a lot of thick rough all over the place. The fairways are more narrower than it was at Augusta. He yesterday, I think, in an eight-hole stretch, hit one of eight fairways. So he's had to kind of hack it around. He started off terribly. His first hole of the tournament, he took a double bogey because he hit a drive into the rough, had a bad lie, had to hack it out. It kind of was downhill right from the start. And I know that he's as mentally strong as maybe any athlete we've seen in our lifetime, but the first hole of the tournament, he takes a double bogey, and Brooks Koepka, who is he playing with, birdies. I mean, you're down three shots to maybe the hottest player in the world through one hole. Like, that had to be kind of an early punch in the gut for Tiger. And he looked very average. I wonder what his preparation reasons were to not play in between. He was thought to probably play an event 2 weeks ago, decided not to. Wednesday, the day before the tournament, he didn't practice. He said he wasn't feeling that great. So he didn't have much tournament prep coming in terms of playing. And I'm wondering if he's maybe thinking that might have backfired on him, because he definitely did not look as crisp and as clean as he did playing, obviously, so well at Augusta National.
All right, Brian. Well, before we let you go and then eventually turn things over, the topic of today that I've been kind of pointing out is obviously Ralph Krueger. The first step of Buffalo's offseason has been complete. They've hired Krueger as the head coach. Where do you think the next step goes from here? What is your next step for this Sabres team? Is it re-signing Jeff Skinner? Is it trading Rasmus Ristolainen? Or is it something that's a little different from what everyone is thinking?
I think the next step is definitely Jeff Skinner. Make a decision and get it done. And to me, if you take Jeff Skinner and cross him off and you look at the Sabres roster, tell me who you have confidence in terms of offensive production beyond Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart. And my answer is I don't know of anybody. I'm intrigued by a few players. Like, I think Connor Sherry is a nice player to have on your team. I was very intrigued by what I saw out of Victor Olofsson last year. But tell me who you can really count on night in and night out past Eichel and Reinhart to give you offensive production. And I'm not ready to jump on anybody else right there. So I think getting Skinner done and getting him signed is his first priority. I think the biggest thing in Botterill's resume right now in terms of a positive was that he made an amazing trade with Carolina. Now don't erase it by having him walk away. And I'm hoping that it's not totally something that would be a money decision. For Skinner, if he's all about, well, I want to win and I want to go to a chance that I can have a winning Stanley Cup, well, that's a tough bargaining chip. The Sabres are going to have to deal with that with a lot of free agents now, because this is not known to be a winning organization for any young player right now, because all a young player would have known this team to be doing is losing. So that's a tough battle in terms of trying. Look, we've talked about the Bills now for a long time, and maybe it's slightly changing under McDermott and under Bean, and the fact that they made the playoffs two seasons ago, maybe the Bills' rap of being the most losing franchise since the 2000s, maybe that has changed. You can get a free agent. Ultimately, you throw a ton of money at somebody, you can probably make their decision for them. But I don't think that Jason Botterill wants to spend $10 million on re-signing Jeff Skinner. Right. So I hope that they can come to some sort of medium agreement there, because I just think, if you lose Jeff Skinner, boy, you're in a big, big hole trying to replace his production value.
All right, Brian, well, why don't you get a pitch in for what's coming up here from 2 to 5 with your show coming up with Dan Cave?
Yeah, Dan will be joining me here. We'll give you our normal Triple Crown coverage for the next 3 hours. As you said before, we're at OTB on Military Road in Niagara Falls, kind of right by the outlets, for those of you wondering where that is. And we'll be talking to Ryan Hasenauer right away here from Batavia Downs. So we'll be running down all the news of the day going on from Pimlico, and of course preview the 13th race of the day, which is the $1.5 million stakes, 144th running of the Preakness Stakes. And yeah, I mean, we're going to talk more about the replay and the Derby, what storylines are there, the fact that Country House is not running. So that is obviously something as well that we'll talk about with Ryan. And we're going to get in a little more on the Sabres. We will get a little bit more in on the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll talk more PGA Championship. And Todd Height, the great OTB handicapper, is going to join us at 4:30 with his last-minute news and notes and expertise. So hope everybody can be with us.
Awesome. Well, Brian, thanks again for joining me to close out Sports Talk Saturday, and enjoy your show.
Thanks, Brayton. Have a good weekend.
You too. You too. Brian Koziel is joining us here as he's getting ready to take over here in a matter of moments here, right here on WGR. One other programming note, and then we'll sign off here. The Buffalo Bandits, they're in action in Game 1 of the NLL Cup Finals tonight. That'll be on WGR. We will have that broadcast for you live, and you can get all the lacrosse action in this weekend in Game 1 of their series with the Calgary Roughnecks. Good luck to the Bandits. Best of luck for everyone with their weekend, and thanks for tuning in again. Brian Koziel and Dan Cave coming up next from the OTB on Military Road in Niagara Falls. Join in, get in on the conversation, 803-0551, 888-552-550, and I'll speak with you again very soon. Thanks again for tuning in on Sports Talk Saturday right here on WGR Sports Radio 550.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.